musical guests Aragon Starr, Irv Lyons Jr., and the band Black Fire. American Indian Airwaves is mixed and mastered in the studios of Burnt Swamp Studios in Signal Hill, California. For Marcus Lopez, I've been your host for the hour, Larry Smith. Until next time.
Wearing their souls on a thread. The moment of silence is over. And for the innocent, you can't justify why your freedom manifests on their graves. And the blood never comes clean from the guilty minds, nor the hands that hold the chains. Against our fears, try not to become what we've endured, wearing our souls on a thread. The moment of silence is over.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hey, Michael here. I'm with the Tin Can Phone Podcast, a radio show where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the source. We tell you the story from the inside out, so make sure to check us out on KBOO Community Radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and you're listening to KBOO in Portland.
Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Indeed you are. Great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk about some stuff that is pretty interesting. So a lot to stick around for, including some stuff you may have seen in the news in recent months. These powerful black people who are effectively white supremacists. We're going to discuss that phenomenon because we recognize that that can be a very confusing thing. If you don't interact with a lot of black folks, or, you know, human nature oftentimes is to kind of stereotype, paint with broad strokes, that sort of thing, you might be getting mixed messages if you look at these black people who really parrot white supremacist ideas and, you know, stand for, you know, just very hard-nosed, hypocritical ideologies. And there's a black face on them. So again, it might be very confusing, but we're going to talk about that today. We've
especially,
done this before.
Especially in some of these cases in the name of just personal political gain.
Absolutely.
Parroting the politics of the far right.
Thank you. So we're going to peel all those layers away. And this one is going to be a deeper dive. I know we've talked about this sort of thing before, but we're also going to talk about forgiveness in the black community. And I really want to pay particular attention on today's episode to Will Smith stopping by Trevor Noah's show and discussing his upcoming movie, but also discussing the Oscars slap, the infamous slap. He offered a lot more insight into that. And I think it's worth looking into what forgiveness looks like, especially when it comes to black men interacting with each other. And so we're going to do both of these things on full display for all of you to witness. But first and foremost, we are going to start off with some Ebony Excellence. So this week's Ebony Excellence is sponsored by Hip Hop Weekly Magazine. For all the latest in hip hop music, check out hiphopweekly.com. Today's segment comes from Black Enterprise. So I'll read from the middle of the article here. Bob Johnson from BET This is old news, but it was news to us, and we thought it was worth celebrating. Bob Johnson.
They some found specifics of it were new to us.
Yeah.
The overall story we knew already.
Right, right. There you go. Thank you. So Bob Johnson is the man that founded BET as a black man. I'll read. The channel did well in its first years, but didn't turn much revenue until a new and exciting form of entertainment came into the picture. And here's a quote. Along the way came music videos, and MTV started playing videos, but they wouldn't play black music videos. So I said, this is Bob Johnson speaking. I said, there's a chance to play black music videos. And that's where we started. And the thing about it that made BET such a success was the videos were free. So imagine a business where the cable operators pay you to carry a program, the record companies give you the content for free, and the advertisers pay to speak to your audience. So he ended up winning in three different ways. So this is how BET rose to prominence, because MTV, I think they would only play Michael Jackson at the time, but they wouldn't really go any deeper than that. And the part of the story that I didn't know that we believe to be Ebony Excellence is in 2001, again, a while ago, but in 2001, Johnson sold BET to Viacom, the infamous Viacom, and BET employees, and in doing so, created a large number of black millionaires who Johnson gave equity in BET. So he created the largest number of black millionaires at one time in American history. And even though that's old news, we didn't know it, and we believe that's Ebony Excellence. So
absolutely.
Shout out to Bob Johnson
one
for that.
One time for Bob Johnson.
All right. So let's talk about black white supremacists. And we're not talking about black conservatives. We're talking about something different. If you are a black conservative, or you know someone who is black and has conservative beliefs, that is normal. That is healthy. That is okay. You know, we recognize that all black people don't feel the same way. We don't all espouse the same values and so forth and so on. But there is something to be said about those folks who really fortify and uphold white supremacist ideals and institutions that we really need to discuss, because it can be very confusing. And, you know, some folks may not know what's right, unfortunately. So I want to start with a phrase that, or a saying, I guess, that we use in the black community, Uncle Tom. We've talked about Uncle Tom on the show before. The actual Uncle Tom person that name comes from was actually not an Uncle Tom, but his name has been co-opted in the black community to refer to black people, often black men, who are not down for their people. You know, black men that want to be accepted at all cost, you know, at cost to their dignity, to their culture, their people, their family, etc. They want to be accepted in often enough white circles, right? So I need you to be familiar with an Uncle Tom. And that's not to be confused with a person like, for those familiar with the original Chappelle show, a Clayton Bigsby sort of a person, right? A Clayton Bigsby sort of a person is a person that doesn't recognize his own blackness as having value or having being even real. There are black people that do not wish to identify as black. We know that this is a very strange thing to encounter, but we have to acknowledge that there are people who try to think of the world in different terms. And I personally feel like that's often a desperate move. That's a move of a person who hasn't been able to connect with his ancestors. Very sad, because no one would want that for anybody. You know, it doesn't matter what part of the world you're from. There are some parts of your ancestry that are beautiful that you should be able to connect with, and to completely turn away from your ancestry, we think that's a very sad thing. But there's some other names I want you to know. There's a guy named Uncle Ruckus. This is another fictional character.
Correct.
He's in a show called The Boondocks. Shout out to my sister, Ymar Taylor. The Boondocks is an anime cartoon about two black kids that move to the suburbs. You should definitely check it out. But there's a character, Uncle Ruckus, and he's another sort of white supremacist type of character, very openly. And they use his character to flesh out concepts in the program. So, and last but not least, I'll mention another fictitious character. This guy's name is Steven. For those of you familiar with Quentin Tarantino films, he had a film called Django Unchained. Steven is another kind of like Uncle Tom type of person. Steven was, the character was played by Samuel L. Jackson in the movie Django Unchained. And for those of you familiar with any of these movies or shows or anything like that, it kind of gives you an idea of basically a black person that hates black people. They may not say that out loud, but their actions and their ideas and their you know, whatever, it often enough suggests that they don't really think very highly of black people, and they can get away with it. They almost always get platforms because they are saying things that white supremacists can't say without being canceled or challenged. So they end up being the
being called racist or white supremacist, right. Which they like being those things. They just don't like being called them.
Right, right. And if you're black, you can do it. And of course, if I'm black and I say, you know, black people are awful and, you know, police brutality is a myth and, you know, black people, it's all your fault and that sort of stuff. No one can come to me because I'm black and say, well, you're being racist. Although that's exactly what I'm doing. It is possible for people to hate themselves and to hate the people that they come from. And this is what we're talking about today. So I want to talk about a name that makes Q's eye twitch. This is a person that is very dangerous. This person gives a black shield to white supremacy. I like that. I should write that down.
A black umbrella, a black shield, a black overcoat.
There you go. This person is intelligent. This person is charismatic. And this person has also been propped up. This person goes by the name of Candace Owens. There goes the eye twitch. I see
it. I closed my eyes so you couldn't see it twitch.
And I want to say something. We've been through recently, Q and myself, we've been through some interesting things lately, right?
That's a way to put it.
Yeah, yeah. And we want to be very careful because we do not, and we're asking you, our listeners, to hold us to this. We do not want to let this show ever devolve into the type of program that tears people down. Rather, we want to hold people accountable, hold people responsible. We want to challenge people and institutions to become better, the best versions of themselves. And we have to be very careful because we have to decide where that line is, but we also have to be mindful of the fact that our words carry weight, especially now. And so we're not trying to tear anyone down. But it's important to mention this woman in particular because this is a woman who actually does believe that police brutality is a myth.
Hold on, wait. You think she believes that?
No. So I went through, you know, researching today's topic, and I gathered my notes from credible sources that talk about Candace Owens and who she is and things that she said. So I know that this is definite. That's why it's first. That's definitely something that she said. That's a very alarming.
No. We know that she said it.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm asking you is, do you think she actually believes that?
Oh, no, I don't think it's not possible.
I think the woman is a con artist.
Yeah.
And is faking everybody out because of its
fiscal implications.
Y'all can't see me, but I just almost touched Ramsey's face because I got so happy that he said that and I couldn't articulate it properly. I don't think she believes that at all.
Sure.
Which is why I despise her.
Mm, yeah. So, you're absolutely right. And we're going to get to that in a little bit too. But fiscal benefit, political influence, there's lots of reasons that a person might do this. But what we look at you know, I'm going to speak for the general, well, it's hard to say that, but most black people in this country, and I think most people who are not conservative would look at this woman and realize that her words don't really reflect a shared reality among black people, right? She is very much a black outlier. But again, what she does is gives people who want what she says to be their truth a reference point, something that is quote unquote credible that they can lean on when they themselves are challenged for their often white supremacist or racist beliefs, right? Now, Candace Owens also praised Hitler for his nationalism. You know, he wanted everybody to be German. What's wrong with that? You know, that sort of thing, right? And something that you brought up on the show before, Q, is that she made a documentary about the murder of George Floyd and did her best to try to make anything else the reason for his death other than a police officer kneeling on his neck for 8 minutes or nearly 9 minutes. Everything else in the world, she tried to make that argument in this film, and then released it on when?
On his birthday.
And so it's those little things that go a little bit beyond just a conservative black voice, that little bit of extra hatred, that little bit of extra je ne sais quoi.
Talk about being intentional.
Right. And this sort of thing often takes a person from simply being a black conservative voice. We've had black conservative voices on this show before. That's not something that we're afraid of. It's something that we reckon. I admit every third episode that I'm a bleeding heart liberal. It's not my deal, but I recognize that other
politicians,
people,
law enforcement.
Yeah, all the above, right? But I think that, again, releasing a movie on his birthday to try to somehow make him the bad guy in the story where he died, it feels particularly offensive, and it's very upsetting for those of us who have a beating heart and empathy, right? And we all saw a man's life end on a video. That should be sad to everyone. I'll admit something too, on the show. I mean, the mic's on, everything's rolling. I'm gonna say it. The worst person in my lifetime that I ever knew about was Osama bin Laden, right? By far the worst person. I'll say it. You know, I recognize that. But when the news came back that he was dead, and I had to go on the radio and share that with the city and pretend to be happy about that. Like, I was definitely happy that the story had an ending. I was definitely happy that it felt like there was a little bit more justice in the universe than I had anticipated, but I was not happy about a human being's life getting ending. Even though it was, I guess, the right ending to that story, it just didn't feel like worth something to celebrate.
Maybe, right? In my mind, the right ending, he gets captured and or arrested and has to, like, even when watching movies as a child, the bad guy dying was never the outcome I wanted. Like, that's not justice. That's just death.
Yeah, it's a different type of thing. But here's the thing. What I want to do is be fair, okay? So we often say this, especially you, but, and I learn from you when you say this. A recent Instagram post of yours, follow him, I am Q Ward, check him out. A recent Instagram post of yours, you say, I'm no one's moral superior or moral guidepost or something like that. Effectually, this is what you're saying. I'm just Estella's son from, you know, 7 Mile, you know, Detroit, West Side, something like that, right? And I think that that is kind of the posture I want to adopt when talking about the death of a person, right? And explaining why this thing that Candace Owens did is particularly offensive. And so I wouldn't tell anybody else how to feel about Osama bin Laden dying, right? You feel how you feel. But it's hard for me to be happy about that thing. If justice is served, cool, happy. You know, these people got closure, cool, happy. A human being, you know, it's just a sad thing for me. And I'm that type of person. I recognize other people may not be like that. So for me, again, looking at this documentary that this woman put out and recognizing that the angle that she took, the approach that she took is offensive. And then to put it out on his birthday and frame him as, like, again, the bad guy in his own story, and he's dead.
Her level of malcontent is really hard to understand. Right. The whole point of it seems to be, I don't want you all to be sad that that man was murdered. So here's all the reasons you shouldn't be.
Right. And that feels like, yo, now let me move on. Oh, let me not forget. She wore the White Lives Matter shirt next to Kanye West. All right.
She also, before we move on, denounced the NAACP.
After it helped
and
her.
And claimed that white supremacy and racism don't exist. Except the NAACP helped her win a lawsuit where Ooh. She sued because she was racially discriminated
Ooh.
Against. Except that doesn't exist. So we can Ooh. Move on. I'm sorry.
No, I like
just,
that.
I like to say like true that. Stuff out loud sometimes.
Yeah, that's okay. That's what we're here for. All right, moving on. Justice Clarence Thomas. This is another name that you might be familiar with.
God bless his soul.
This is the guy that looks so much like Samuel L. Jackson's character in Django Unchained.
He might look more like Uncle Ruckus from your sister's.
Either would be like show. A combination of the two. Anyway, he is a Supreme Court justice and a black conservative, right? And he wants black people to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, right? Which, for a second, for the record, let me say, that saying was initially made in jest. Think about it. Is it possible for you to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps? No, it was a joke.
Especially if you don't have boots to begin with.
Anyway, the idea, meaning that black people are responsible for changing our own reality, is not something that we don't brush up against in our day-to-day lives, right? So a person feeling that and championing that message isn't the worst thing in the world. We recognize that we have issues that we need to deal with in our communities, just like every other community has issues that are more relevant to their actual lives and their actual cultures, right? So if that was the end of his story, that would be all well and good. But bear in mind that this man, who is the physical embodiment of the phrase, all skin folk ain't kin folk, this is a black saying for those that are uninitiated. this is a man whose wife participated in and protected those involved in the January 6th insurrection to try to overturn the election results and basically overthrow the government proceedings, right? And this is a person, he's famously quiet, but if you look at his voting record, you recognize that his record is nowhere near in alignment with what it is that many black people would say that we need in this country.
Quite the contrary.
Yeah, he's
almost intentionally
right
against.
And this is a little people. Again, this is a little bit more than just a conservative voice. This guy's a little bit more like intentional here. Herschel Walker. This man is the embodiment of everything that the right supposedly despises about black men in America. My belief is that we live in a celebrity culture that kind of gave him a head start because of his name, and then he's been managed to ride that wave. It's the only way that makes sense to me, because if you've heard him talk, if you've heard him,
I mean, that's the thing that troubles me the most.
Shoot,
if you've ever heard him speak, about any topic. It doesn't matter. Even the topic you think he'd be an expert at, which is football. When you hear him talk at length about any topic, just how grossly qualified he is to be in front of people for any reason becomes clear.
Yeah. Then unqualified. Yeah.
And then presenting him as someone who should be in a leadership role with regards to our nation's government should seem like insanity, except there is a portion of our population that have shown that there is no depth.
No,
they will not steep to.
Okay, now watch this. He is more than happy to play that role, which is why the people on the right that are really, really deeply conservative are pushing so hard to get that man elected, knowing full well that he's a complete hypocrite.
I think
completely unqualified.
Racist is better than saying deeply conservative.
Deeply racist. Thank you, Q. I appreciate you helping me out. All right. And then we're going to dedicate a few seconds to a gentleman named Kanye West, or better said, Ye. And we will recap here. He went from the man that we knew saying George Bush doesn't care about black people to the man we know who has the Confederate flag sewn into his clothes years ago, said slavery was a choice, who said Harriet Tubman never actually freed slaves, who of course wore the Make America Great Again hat and later the White Lives Matter shirt. We know a little bit about that. And is now fraternizing with known white supremacists, right? And any
like
one of
flagrant bigot
way
Nazi
out there.
Level white so, supremacists.
Absolutely. Now, any one of those things by themselves, maybe two things. Hey, man, maybe he's just on his journey, right? But all of them together let you know full well that this is a black white supremacist, more than just a conservative. And what are the reasons? Well, grift, self-hatred, desire for attention, desire for money, lunacy, the list goes on, right? But what we need to do is let you know, don't be fooled. As we said, all skin folk ain't kin folk. You need to do a little bit more in the way of gaining a consensus before you decide what your truth, or rather what you believe other people's truths to be. Mm. So sit with that.
And now, proper propaganda. Watch it. Pull my mic back. You like that? Journalists with journalists too. We can strike back. Hardcore reporters with orders from headquarters. Behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders.
Now, if you are just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I am your host, Ramses Ja.
He is Ramses Ja. I am Q Ward. You are listening to Civic Cypher.
Yes, indeed. Keep sticking around because we are still doing our thug thizzle up here. We're going to talk about forgiveness in the black community, and we're going to use Will Smith as an example. I'm really excited to talk about that. Also, for our Way Black History Fact, we're going to talk about a guy named Solomon Sir Jones, a name that you might not be familiar with, but this is a man that preserved a not insignificant amount of black history, and his name needs to be mentioned, and why the history he preserved needs to be mentioned as well, so that you understand and can appreciate a little bit more about your black brothers and sisters. And that's what we're here to do. But first and foremost, I think it's about time that we teach you a new way to become a better ally. Baba, how does that sound, Q?
Shall we?
We shall. So today's Baba, Become a Better Ally, is sponsored by the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. You can check out Black Information Network Daily Podcast on iHeart.com or through the iHeart Radio app. Now, this story comes from the Griot. Everyone has that one extravagant person in their lives, that person who always shows up fashionably late and dressed to the nines, no matter the occasion, whether that's your bougie auntie or the Beyonce of your friend group. We've hunted down an array of unique and chic gifts for the fashion gurus on your list this year. Now, the reason we chose this is because we want you to support black businesses. It's holiday season, and these are companies that we've whittled down for you. I also want to mention that this list is available on our Facebook. It's at Civic Cypher, and on our Twitter at Civic Cypher. So we're going to shout out these companies. There's 10 of them. So Lorvay and Alisa Johnson, that's Magic Johnson's daughter. They are making these really dope glasses, like fashion glasses. So check them out if you know someone that wants some glasses for the holidays. I think this is pronounced Sucre. And then another one that's Oma, the label. They make jewelry. The jewelry looks really dope. I checked it out. Stripped, Ama Nuok or Nuoki, Marche Chanel Squared, and Irregular Exposure. All these companies make women's clothing. Amina Abdul Jalil makes shoes, and they're like women's shoes. I'm not a woman, so they're cool women's shoes. I don't know what they're called, but they got the thing on the back. And Brandon Blackwood makes handbags. And again, check our Twitter or our Facebook at Civic Cypher to get some cool gift ideas and at the same time support a black business.
Support
and that way
a black business.
And that way you can become a better ally. All right, moving on. Forgiveness. All right, so I'm going to share a quick story. I also host a podcast. Q joins me very often on the show, the Black Information Network Daily Podcast. And then I have a special version of that show that I put out from time to time whenever my producer Chris lets me, called One More Thing. And some months ago, I had a One More Thing installment where I talked about the Will Smith apology, right? So this is after the Oscar slap. He got a camera and it was like a newsroom in the middle of nowhere. And he just kind of spoke to the camera for a few minutes and apologized to everyone, and in particular to Chris Rock and his family. And I saw that. And I saw that he owned his mistake. He acknowledged that he hurt Chris Rock above all else. He hurt his fans. He hurt casual, you know, viewers of the show. He hurt the Academy. You know, he stole a night that was so special to so many people because of his behavior, right? He acknowledged that. And from what I understand or what I recall of that, he committed to trying to be a better man and doing better in the future, right? And then, of course, he says, you know, Chris, whenever you're ready to talk, I'm here, right? Not continuing to, you know, harp on his name or anything like that, but listen, man, I was wrong. When you're ready, I'm here. Let me make it right. You know, this is the energy that he gave up. I'm not quoting him. I want to make sure that that's clear. And so I had to make an episode because I saw that, and I saw people saying some stuff that I didn't really love. Okay. People were like, that's not an apology, or man, he deserves, you know, blah, blah, blah. We need to stop watching, you know, that sort of stuff, right? And, you know, admittedly, a lot of these comments come from the internet. But the internet is a real thing. It is. We can't pretend like it's not. And, you know, part of the reason, we'll get to it later, but part of the reason Will Smith said that he lost his cool in the moment where he ended up slapping Chris Rock was because of, in part at least, because he had endured so much online abuse because of his marriage and some of the goings on in his marriage, right? And it just became more than he could handle. I'm not making excuses for that man. That man is not making excuses for himself, okay? Be clear about that. Anyway, so he does his apology, and I look at this and I look at the comments and I'm like, wait a minute. What more do we want from a person if they've done something wrong? You know, here's what I did. Here's how it made you feel. Here's what I'm going to do in the future. Beyond that, what more do we want? Right? Are people supposed to be born perfect? Are people supposed to be born and then not make mistakes? Or let me ask another question. Are people simply the worst thing that they've ever done? I think you would say no. That's not true, any more than people are simply the best thing that they've done.
Yeah, but most people would say that with regard to themselves.
Sure.
And we're talking about me. We're the best lawyers in the world.
When
we're talking about you, we become judge, justice.
Thank you.
Right? We become, we're going to tell you all the things that you did wrong and all the punishment you deserve for them.
Okay.
But when we're talking about ourselves, we're going to explain to you, marginalize, justify, make excuses for all of our wrongs, because of course there was a reason. I'm not just a bad person.
Right.
So all that context, all that nuance, and all that color exists when I'm talking about me. When I'm talking about you, you're just awful, Ramses, and you need to, you know, be able to own and accept that.
So I love that you said that, because therein lies the double standard, and dare I say, the hypocrisy that we all need to come to terms with, right? And I think that we, this show exists to try to create a little bit more empathy in our conversations and our interactions and so forth. And I think as an additional Baba, I would challenge you, if you can see attacks online and you feel like that person is going through it better than me, but you don't feel like the attacks are entirely warranted, maybe speak up. You know, Will Smith says something in his interview with Trevor Noah, which we'll get to, but he says you never know what a person is going through. And I know that this, what we're trying to do is discuss Black forgiveness, and I will bring it home, but I do believe that forgiveness, to err is human, right? To forgive, divine. So this is not just a Black issue. I think that in Black circles, especially with Black men, our mental health has been addressed more and more in modern years, particularly because of people like Charlemagne bringing it out into the open so we can discuss it. How do we feel? Is our mind, is our brain lying to us? You know, I used to think, because of bad information, I used to think that, I don't even want to go into it, but I used to think really bad things about Black people. And I thought that I was bad because I was a Black person. Right. And that's as much as I'll give right now, because I don't feel like crying on this show. But I had to grow up with that. Right.
We'd be tearing up on this mic. You don't feel like crying again, you mean?
Right. Right. Exactly.
We'd be in this thing.
But I had to grow up with that. Right. And, you know, the self-hatred, you know, we talked about self-hatred in the first half of the show with a lot of the Black white supremacists. Now, obviously, I didn't get nowhere near that far gone, but I did recognize that I wish that I wasn't me. Why would I be born and have consciousness? Why would I be born this person? What did I do to deserve this? How come I can't have a happy story where my family came on the Mayflower? Why did my family have to be slaves? How can I be proud of that? And then everyone I see that looks like me is poor and crying, and they don't have food, and nobody, you know what I'm saying? And I'm from Compton, so my experience is not universal among Black people, but I had a real childhood.
It may not be universal.
It's not uncommon, though.
But it's definitely not uncommon.
Say that.
Right? Right. Most Black people in this country, even those who have reached the pinnacle of success and wealth, they're at most a generation removed from the exact story that you told.
Boom.
You know what I mean? That not great grand, but just grandma.
Yeah. Shoot, Dr. Westenberg comes to the show all the time, and she always tells us the stories of what life was like growing up herself. So anyway, so mental health, right? Us taking a moment now to have at least a conversation about our mental health, our self-image, what it means to be exhausted, and how effective we are as fathers and as protectors and as, you know, leaders and as, you know, whatever your role is, you know, to take a moment and make sure that our brain isn't lying to us has become a little bit more important, right? But what I've seen is that we also need to have conversations about how to forgive each other. That doesn't mean that we don't take responsibility. That doesn't mean that at all.
Yeah.
Because I think that, I think one of the highest testaments to manhood, I'm a man, so I will speak for men, and adulthood, because I'm an adult, so I will speak to that, is acknowledging where you fall short and owning that and owning the impact that it makes and owning how you are going to revise your behavior if you don't like it. Again, here's what I did. Here's how it made you feel. Here's what I'll do in the future.
That gives us a lot to unpack. And the lack of what you just said is what has caused a sort of hypervigilance or a gross need for hyper accountability. That's where cancel culture came from. People think that we all just jumped off the porch wanting to cancel people because we're mean, I guess. I think, you know, we speak about like the Me Too movement as a moment in history. So many years of so many men taking full advantage of their manhood in broad daylight at the peril of so many women caused a backlash that for some people felt like it was too far. But you have to understand, this is in the face of impunity.
Sure.
So many people have not been held accountable. Now everyone has to be.
Yeah.
Right. So the lack of people saying, this is what I did, this is how it made you feel, this is what you deserve, and this is what I plan to do, mm-hmm. causes people to overreach. Because if they think nothing's being done or no one's being held accountable, yeah. they want accountability on a grander scale.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what leads to that kind of lack of forgiveness. Like, no, we don't want another person to get away with doing something wrong.
Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because I, if I'm honest, didn't even think of the opposite side mm-hmm. of that, right? So I'm glad you brought that into the conversation here. Now, let's talk about Will Smith, just because it gives us a great opportunity to examine what forgiveness looks like. Now, again, to err is human. And then when it comes to Black people and Black men in particular, because I have that frame of reference, these conversations don't often happen because we're not taught this and because we are dealing with other societal pressures, and we need the discipline and we need to, you know, understand the pressures that we have so that we can do a lot more healing and a lot less fighting, on and on. You know, again, this is a constructive show, not a destructive show. We try to make it that way.
It's an important thing to point out.
But we have to also acknowledge Black white supremacists too.
Mm-hmm.
So not tearing them down, just point it out. So don't give these people your attention, money, time, energy, or anyone like them. And that's how we beat that. Anyway, back to what I'm saying. So Will Smith goes on to the Trevor Noah show. Okay. And he talks about that slap after he talks about the movie he's promoting, right? And I'll be honest, man, it was good to see his face. Will Smith is not, again, this is me talking. I won't speak for you. I won't speak for anyone else. He's not the worst thing that he's ever done. You're not the worst. Listening to my voice, you're not the worst thing you've ever done. I certainly hope I will not be the worst thing I've ever done on my day of judgment or whatever.
I know some people who are dead set that I am
sure,
the worst
sure.
things I've ever done.
Well, fortunately,
I've heard them say it out loud.
Well, those people are not God.
Amen.
Now, Will Smith mentioned, he's like, you know, my father used to hit my mother. I think it might have been Trevor Noah said that he read that in Will's book, that, you know, he saw a lot of abuse growing up. So there was a component of that, right? I mentioned earlier that Will mentioned that he had pent up rage from a lot of the online harassment, a lot of which was directed at his relationship with his wife. And people, everyone had their opinions on what he should have done, what he shouldn't have done, how he should feel or shouldn't feel, and you know, him being emotional about it. And you got to bear in mind, this is the man's wife, yeah, and the mother of his children. And
people have a very, very slighted view of how impossible it is to live all of your life publicly, not mm-hmm. just your public persona and your career, but your relationship as well.
Right.
I unfortunately had a small peek into what a public relationship with a public figure looks and feels like.
I remember that.
It is not fun.
Yeah.
It is not exciting, especially when there are hardships and downfalls and mistakes. They are also made out loud and in front of people.
Right.
And you get to hear how, in my case, thousands of people, in his case, millions of people feel about the decisions that you make that hurt that person, that there might be that person's fan and mm-hmm. not yours. Mm-hmm. So you are in perpetuity the bad guy.
Mm.
The whole Will Smith thing has been complicated for me, Rams, is because I've never met Chris Rock, but as you know, I have a very close relationship with his brother.
Oh, with yeah.
And met Will when I first started my career in professional sports and entertainment, have been to his home and got some of the best advice I ever got from him. Both of those guys were heroes to me.
Yeah.
Both of them, superheroes. And seeing them put in a position where for a moment they were, you know, because of Will's decision, opposition to each other.
Yeah, that didn't.
And they'd never been that before.
Yeah, that didn't.
And what we've all seen is, you know, I got to feel how one of my best friends felt about his brother
getting
being hit in the face
in front of everybody.
World.
Yeah.
That's a lot to reconcile.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, never like for us to be out front at each other like that.
Mm-hmm.
You and I, in our own way, have steered as clear as we can of being opposition to someone that, as far as views go, we are opposed to, but we've tried very hard to not have it be framed as an us versus him.
Yeah.
Even with things that we're dealing with.
Q is being very cryptic, but I know what he's talking about. Yeah, and you probably know too.
So it hurt to see them in that space. I must say, however, though, Will is trying.
That's where I want to, because I think that forgiveness starts with intention, trying, right? And I think that we should honor that in our interpersonal relationships, one-on-one, when we look at people and offer our opinions online, when we move through time and space, we have to acknowledge that we are human beings interacting with other human beings, right? Will says something in his interview. He says, be nice. You never know what someone else is going through. He says, on that day, I was going through some stuff, right? And for whatever reason, he thought what he did was the right thing. And in short order, he tells a story. He says, when I got home, my nephew was at home. He was watching the Oscars. He says, my nephew came and sat on my lap and he held the Oscar. Is it Oscar or Emmy?
Oscars.
Oscar. Okay, cool. So he sat on his lap and held the Oscar. And he says, Uncle Will, why did you hit that man? And Will was like, oh my God. And in that moment, he realized that was the wrong thing to do.
And maybe
maybe
even not just in that moment, but you talking about an exclamation mark.
There you go. That's probably because I don't want to speak for the man, yeah. but you know, and since then he's like, look, that was wrong. That whole night was a stupor. What I did, what I said afterward, that was where I was at. And that's not who I want to be. So how do I make it right? How does he make it right? Ask yourself, what do we want from people when they make mistakes?
Perfection.
If not
perfection, apparently.
But right? What is perfection after you've made a mistake? If we can understand and appreciate that human beings make mistakes, if you yourself recognize that mistakes are possible in your own life and skin, right? Then what do we want from other people when they make mistakes? Do we want them to apologize? Do we want them to acknowledge the hurt that they've, you know, caused? Do we want them to adjust their, you know, behavior moving forward? Do we want some sort of compensation?
You hit the nail on the head, Rams. Starting at I was wrong, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I was wrong and I apologize with no qualifiers at all. What I did was wrong. Stop. I apologize. Stop. Like,
that's it.
There's not qualifiers there. you know, apparently for some people, there is no right thing to do after a mistake. You made that mistake. So
that's it.
That's it.
And that's fair. But if we are inclined to forgive someone, we need to really be conscientious of what that looks like. And if you feel like people don't deserve any grace, any forgiveness, then keep that energy and expect that in return.
My point exactly.
Now I want to say this:
no one deserves forgiveness. Please include yourself in that equation.
Yes. Now, I do want to say this. I wrote this note, and I think it sounds great. Trevor Noel was very gracious. Trevor allowed him to not be a perfect human, but be perfectly human. Right, recognizing that human beings are flawed creatures. And I do want to add this, and this is kind of one of the things that sort of helped me start thinking about this as a concept, you know, forgiveness among us Black people. You know, we have stuff, gang stuff, we have, you know, clique stuff, rap beefs, and all this sort of stuff in our communities, and forgiveness is not talked about nearly enough. And so this is why I really wanted to take some time. But there were two people that I saw. This is a years old video, but I just saw it recently, so forgive me. Sports guys, I'm not a sports guy again. I saw Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas. They were interviewing with each other where they forgave each other. Now, I don't even know why they were mad in the first place.
I'll tell you that story one day when the mics aren't on.
Okay. But it was beautiful. They broke down. They started crying. I guess they were friends once upon a time.
The closest.
And
Cuban Ramblers level friends.
Oh, that would never happen to me and you. But you know what I'm saying? You could see that it's like how...
But imagining it did happen to me and you,
yeah,
can paint why you saw them
so emotional.
Yeah.
But it for that video, again, if you wanted to Google it, Magic Johnson, Isaiah Thomas interview, you see why forgiveness is important and just how healing it can be. And I think it's important for us to start to center that in our conversations in addition to our mental health. And scene. And now it's time for the Way Black History Fact. Today's Way Black History Fact is sponsored by Major Threads Menswear. To get the finest in menswear, check out majorthreads.com. Our Way Black History Fact today, we're talking about Solomon Sir Jones from 1869 to 1936. All right. He was an American minister and amateur filmmaker, best known for his collection of 29 silent black and white films, totaling 355 minutes worth of footage, documenting African-American communities in Oklahoma from 1924 to 1928. In 2016, Jones's films were selected for the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. Jones was born in Tennessee to parents who had once been enslaved. He grew up in the South before moving to Oklahoma in 1889. Jones became an influential Baptist minister, building and pastoring 15 churches. He was head of the Boyd faction of Negro Baptists in America and was a successful businessman. Jones's films consist of 29 silent black and white films documenting African-American communities in Oklahoma from 1924 to 1928. They contain 355 minutes of footage shot with the then new 16mm cameras. The films document a rich tapestry of everyday life, funerals, sporting events, schools, parades, businesses, Masonic meetings, river baptisms, families at home, African-American oil barons and their wells, black colleges, Juneteenth celebrations, and a transcontinental foot race. Jones's films have been preserved by the Smithsonian Institute, the Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library of the Yale University Library, and the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Shout out to them. They are considered to be the most extensive film records we have of Southern and urban Black life and culture at the time of rapid social and cultural change for African Americans during the 1920s and the very beginning of the Great Migration, which transformed not only Black people as a whole, but America itself. Jones filmed Oklahoma residents in their homes during their social, school, and church activities, in the businesses they owned, and performing various jobs. The films document several Oklahoma communities, including, forgive me, Oklahoma, Muskogee, Okmulgee, Tulsa, Wewaka, Bristow, and Taft. The films also document Jones's trips to Indiana, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee, Missouri, Illinois, New York City, South Carolina, Colorado, and overseas to France, England, Palestine, Switzerland, Italy, North Africa, and Germany. I've been to all those places except like two. Slates between scenes identify locations, dates, and subjects. Jones frequently filmed at various locations by positioning himself outside a building while people exited the building in a line. This perspective provides footage of people as they walk by the camera, usually looking directly at it. Footage of churches includes congregants exiting the service and socializing outside. Footage of schools often includes students playing outside or doing exercises, and footage of people at their homes includes them outside on their porches or in their yards. Aside from church and scheduled school activities, people presumably exited at Jones's request for the purposes of being filmed by him. In addition to his work with film, Jones was a businessman and a Baptist minister who either established or was the pastor of some 15 churches in his lifetime. He was the son of ex-slaves, born in Tennessee and grew up in the South. Jones spent the next several decades building Black institutions, establishing churches, newspapers, and businesses, and supporting the activities of schools and hospitals. Jones also remained active in church politics, holding leadership roles in the National Baptist Convention of America, one of the largest African-American denominations in the United States, for many years. Jones was a fierce defender of Black institutions, one of many African-American leaders in Oklahoma who supported what came to be called all Black towns, municipalities occupied and governed by Black settlers. One of these towns was targeted in 1921, here we go, by white mobs for one of the worst racist attacks in American history, referred to as the Tulsa Race Massacre. More than 800 people were admitted to hospitals, and as many as 6,000 Black residents were interned in large facilities, many of them for several days. The Oklahoma Bureau of Vital Statistics officially recorded 36 dead. A 2001 State Commission examination of events was able to confirm that of the 36 dead, 26 were Black and 10 white. It is believed that there are many more than 36 that died. I just want to tell you that that's not in this here that I'm reading. Based on contemporary autopsy reports, death certificates, and other records, Jones was well traveling across not only the United States, but overseas as well. His films of his overseas travels were only slightly less significant than Jones's films of Oklahoma, which still serve as a visual commemoration of the 35 years he spent advocating for African-American people and institutions in Oklahoma. Now, I do want to say that I pulled from two sources. One was the Yale, because they have the actual footage in that entity, Yale, the school, and Wikipedia. So this is why you might hear a couple of things repeated twice. I also want to say that, you know, this might seem sort of maybe unremarkable to us modern folks, but for us, for Black people, you know, when we see old movies, old films, silent films like this, we often see ourselves as either not there or some sort of caricature of ourselves, or as servants. We're propping up society rather than participating in it. And for those of you who maybe didn't grow up Black, for those of you that have old films where you see yourself represented, your culture, your people represented, driving cars and engaging in whatever, you kind of take it for granted. But when you don't have that and you see those films and you notice that there are no Black people here, and the Black people you do, they're just serving people. Again, there's not a lot of dignity that you can find. You can find the Black people existed. And these films are not only important because there was a Black filmmaker, but they're important because, as I mentioned, he filmed locations by positioning himself outside of the building. So he saw people coming out of stores. He saw people coming out of churches. He saw people playing, people sitting in their front yard, people just having fun and living their lives, and they were Black. And that's not something that you find in films like this from that time. We're people, you know? We're not just, you know, when you think back in the day, you think slaves, right? And that's fair, because back in the day, that's all we were. You know what I mean? But
except that was never all we were.
And thank you. And these films are important because it shows a full human being living in America who has melanin in his skin and her skin and their skin. And so, again, we want to shout out Solomon Sir Jones for archiving these films for us to enjoy. Check out his work. And just get a glimpse into what it looks like to be Black and successful before they came and burned it down in 1921. So, yeah. Sorry. But that's going to do it for us here on Civic Cypher. Once again, I'm your host, Ramses Jah.
He is Ramses Jah. I am Q Ward. Thank you guys for tuning in with us again. Thank you guys for listening every week.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for caring about what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, these topics don't have to be important to you, especially if you're not Black. For those of you that are not, that invest so much of your time and energy into what we're talking about and how we feel and our experiences, we appreciate you.
Absolutely. Today's show is produced by Maggie B. Nolan. Hit the website, civiccypher.com, to submit any questions, any topics, make a donation. The show is growing, and it continues to grow with your support. Follow us on all social media, of course, at civiccypher.com. You can follow Q at I Am Q Word. You can follow me at Ramses Jah. And, of course, you can download the show, this and any other previous episode, on our website as well. And, again, yeah, thanks for listening. So until next week, y'all, peace.
Peace. From headquarters, behind enemy lines, sidestepping the borders. With press passes, we bring it to you as it happens. The streets love my crew for music and rapping. Street commander / beat expander, here to fight the slander with the proper propaganda. What's happening? You got a question, then ask it. The news is just a TV show, get past it. And this from a quiet wartime journalist. Headlines, wake up, refuse, and resist. Like this, like this, like this, like this.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
You probably know that KBOO Community Radio is listener sponsored, but did you know that 80% of our funding comes from donations from listeners just like you? You can always make a donation to keep